Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're stepping into the world of stochastic processes, specifically something called first passage percolation, or FPP.
Yeah, FPP. It's essentially a way to model how things spread through a random environment. Think maybe fluid flow, or even how an infection might move.
Like through a network of pipes where each connection, each pipe segment has a random delay.
Exactly. And we've been looking at a pretty advanced paper that explores the geometry of how this random growth eventually settles down. It actually proves some surprising things about the final shape and what that means for real-world models, like competition between species.
Okay, so our mission for you, the listener, is to really unpack the key takeaways here. We want to get a handle on how the specific randomness in those delays determines the final shape, whether that shape can be perfectly smooth, and what this tells us about competition and how fast things grow. Let's start at the beginning, though. What exactly is first passage percolation, and what governs its growth?
Okay, so the basic model, it actually goes way back to Hammersley and Walsh in the 60s, 1965, I believe. You imagine a grid, like an infinite checkerboard, the Z202 lattice, and on every single connection between neighboring squares, every edgy, you place a random travel time, tau. These times are non-negative, and they're drawn independently from the same distribution, tau.
Right, so it's like every little path segment has its own random speed limit.
Exactly. And the passage time between any two points, say 6 and an hour, is just the minimum possible total time it takes to get from 6 to taller by adding up the tau along any path, the fastest route.
The geodesic path. So what about this random ball? What does that represent?
With the tellers, it's just the set of all points on the grid that you can reach from the starting point, the origin, within a total time down.
The big question is, what does this ball look like when tau gets really, really large? Does it stay all jagged and random looking?
Ah, well, that's where the classic shape theorem comes in. This was proven by Cox and Durrett. It's a fundamental result. It says that if you take this random ball and scale it down, divide its size by tellers as cos goes to infinity, it actually converges to a fixed, non-random shape. It's convex, it's compact, and we call it the limit shape, woo-moo.
Wow, okay. So the randomness averages out over large scales to give a predictable shape. That's already pretty cool.
It is. But, you know, this amazing result left some really fundamental questions open. Questions this paper directly tackles.
Right, like what?
Well, three main things. First, what kinds of convex shapes can actually be a limit shape bamboo? Can you get any shape you want, or are there restrictions?
Okay, question one. What shapes are possible?
Second, what's the exact relationship between the initial distribution of times and the specific geometry of bamboo? How does the micro randomness determine the macro shape?
Got it. Question two. How does bamboo determine bamboo?
And third, how does the actual random boundary fluctuate around that smooth deterministic limit, demu? How much does it wobble?
The fluctuations. Okay, three big questions. So how did the authors of this paper start to chip away at these? Did they look at all possible time distributions of two?
No, they focused things a bit, which is smart. They looked at a specific class of distributions they call emperor.
Inshu, what defines that class?
Two key things. First, the passage times tau is have to be at least 1. So 10 per mu is in $1.50. There is a minimum possible time for any edge.
A speed limit, basically. Nothing instantaneous. What's the second thing?
The second, and this is crucial for the geometry, is that the probability of an edge having exactly that minimum time, time 1, is some value each eye. And this probability has to be high enough. Specifically, greater than or equal to if 2j, which is the critical parameter for something called oriented percolation.
Okay, so PHA is like a threshold. If the chance of getting the fastest possible time, 1, is above this threshold, something interesting happens.
Exactly. It means those fast lanes are common enough to link up and create efficient paths. And if a PETI is strictly greater than PETIZ, a theorem by Marchand showed that the limit shape PETI develops flat edges.
Flat edges.
Yeah.
So parts of the boundary become straight lines.
Precisely. There's a specific range of angles called the percolation cone where the shape is flat. It corresponds to directions where the optimal strategy is just to use as many of those time one edges as possible.
And these flat edges are defined by a line segment, right? They mentioned MP.
Yes, that segment is part of the boundary of the line dollar unit ball, and the limit shape PETIME is flat along that segment within the percolation cone.
Okay, so we have this shape. It's mostly curved, but it has these distinct flat parts because of the common minimum time. Now let's get to the core geometric result. This is where it gets weird, right?
This is the real surprise, yeah. The general intuition, or maybe hope, was that outside of this percolation cone, The shape peen would be strictly convex, nice and round.
But the main result, theorem 2.1 of the paper, says something different.
It says something really counterintuitive. It says that for any measure in this Mendeley class, the boundary, partial b mu, is actually differentiable right at the endpoints of that flat edge. Let's say at the point NPA.
Hold on. Differentiable means smooth, like a curve.
Mm-hmm.
But Mendeley is the corner where the flat part ends and the curved part begins. How can a corner be smooth? That sounds like a contradiction.
It does, doesn't it? If it were a polygon, like a square or hexagon, the corners where the flat sides meet are definitely not differentiable. They're sharp points.
Right.
But this theorem proves differentiability at Mendeley's. That means the transition from the flat edge to the curved part isn't a sharp turn. It's smooth.
So what does that imply about the overall shape if it's smooth at the corner?
It forces a really complex structure. If the boundary is differentiable there, the arc that starts immediately after Mendeley must be strictly curved. It can't be flat.
Okay.
And because it's smooth at Mendeley, that point in Mendeley has to be what's called an accumulation point of extreme points. Meaning there are infinitely many corners or points of extreme curvature piling up right next to no one, which leads directly to corollary 2.1. The shape cannot be a polygon.
It has infinitely many sides.
Infinitely many sides. It's fundamentally non-polygonal. And this was a big deal because until some related work mentioned in the paper, there weren't any proven examples of FTP limit shapes that weren't polygons. This showed a whole new, more complex geometry was possible.
That is genuinely surprising. Just by setting a minimum time and making it common enough, you guarantee a shape with infinite complexity. What does this geometry mean when we connect FPP back to those growth and competition models you mentioned?
The implications are pretty direct and quite profound. Think about models where you have, say, different species or types starting at different locations and spreading out.
Like the Richardson growth model or these first passage competition models.
Exactly. In those competition models, each species dollar colonizes a region, let's call it Chefe. The interesting question is, can multiple species survive indefinitely? Can they all maintain an infinite territory as time goes on? We call that coexistence.
And how does the shape ball relate to coexistence?
Well, there's a beautiful connection shown by Hoffman. Basically, coexistence of different species is possible if, and only if, the limit shape amino has at least Kayla distinct sides or extreme points.
I see where this is going.
Since we just established that for any moon in this Tala class, the shape emu has infinitely many sides.
Then it must allow for infinite coexistence.
Yeah, it's theorem 2.2 in the paper. If mean Wu Mabardi, the system admits coexistence of infinitely many species, the complex geometry directly guarantees endless competition, in a sense.
That's a huge takeaway. The specific nature of the random medium forces a shape that allows infinite competition. What about the paths themselves, the actual routes the infection or growth takes?
Right, we can look at the graph of infection. That's the collection of all the edges that are actually used by some geodesic, some minimal time path, starting from the origin.
Okay, the network of fastest routes.
Yeah. And we can ask about the structure of this graph. Does it branch out indefinitely? Does it have what are called ends?
Ends, what are those?
An end is basically an infinite branch. It's an infinite connected part of the graph that remains even if you cut off a finite piece near the origin. Think of it as a pathway that escapes to infinity.
And what did the paper find about these ends?
Theorem 2.3 gives a really interesting result. It says that if your time distribution is in the many-ply class, and it's not purely atomic.
Meaning it has a continuous part, like the times could be 1.1, 1.2, etc., not just 1 or 2.
Exactly. If there's some continuous range of possible times, then the graph of infection almost surely has infinitely many ends. The infection pathways branch out infinitely.
So again, this underlying randomness in EMPRI, especially with a continuous component, leads to profound structural complexity, both in the overall shape and the paths taken. Okay, let's shift gears a bit to that third big question, fluctuations. How much does EMPRI actually wobble around the smooth limit-shaped poot?
Right. We want to understand the variance of the passage time. If you look at the time tau, nx, to reach a point far away in direction 6 dollar, distance nullar, how much does that time vary randomly? How does its variance grow with n dollar?
For a simple random walk in 1D, the variance grows linearly with n dollar.
Right.
Diffusive scaling.
Correct. But FPP in 2D is thought to be different. Physicists have long predicted a sub-diffusive scaling, maybe like Knoller to the power of 13 Zhang. Getting rigorous bounds has been tough.
What was known before this paper?
There were some important lower bounds from Newman and Pisa and later Zhang. They showed that the variance, Texfar logger and Deckdollar, grows at least as fast as a Logsad dollar. But this was initially only proven for directions outside that flat percolation cone.
Okay, a logarithmic growth, but only away from the flat parts. What does this paper add?
It confirms and significantly extends that logarithmic bound. Corollary 2.2 shows that under a mild condition on one Wöhlerian O, basically, that it has finite exponential moments, meaning very large times are rare enough.
Okay.
Then the variance is indeed bounded below by a 13th log for all directions outside the percolation cone. It confirms this log scaling holds generally outside the flat region.
So randomness definitely accumulates, albeit slowly, logarithmically, as long as you're not going in the direction of that super stable flat edge. What about inside the cone?
That's the interesting contrast. Inside the percolation cone for directions along the flat edge, the variance is actually known to be bounded above by a constant. It doesn't grow with no dollar.
Wow. So very stable, almost deterministic travel time in that specific direction, but logarithmic fluctuations as soon as you veer off it.
Exactly. It highlights the sharp difference in behavior depending on the direction relative to the percolation cone.
And the paper gives one more result on fluctuations, right? A
Right.
stronger bound under a geometric condition.
Yes, Theorem 2.7. This assumes a bit more about the shape. If you assume the limit shape, Beamer has a positive radius of curvature in some direction, so it's nicely curved there,
Yeah.
and you still have that exponential moment condition on the moan, then the lower bound on the variance gets much stronger. It improves from low a dollar to a power law. Textvar is at least 3 a dollar and 14.
No dollar to the 1/4 power. That's a significant improvement and gets closer to the conjectured in $13.
It is. And it provides a concrete mathematical inequality relating the exponents that govern variance and how much the optimal paths wiggle around.
Okay, let's try to synthesize this. We started with a random grid where travel times have a minimum value that occurs frequently enough, this meter class. We saw this leads to limit shapes that surprisingly are not polygons, but have infinitely many sides.
Right. And that specific complex geometry has direct consequences. It guarantees that in related competition models, infinitely many species can coexist indefinitely. And if the time distribution isn't purely discrete, the actual paths of spread branch out infinitely often, creating infinitely many ends in the infection graph.
Plus, the analysis confirms that fluctuations around the limit shape grow logarithmically in almost all directions, contrasting sharply with the stability inside the percolation cone. This leaves us with a really interesting point you raised earlier. The paper proved the graph of infection has infinitely many ends if money is in main dollars and has a continuous part.
But they explicitly state the result is unknown if mainmar is purely atomic, meaning times can only be, say, 1, 2, or 5, with no values in between. So here's something for you, the listener, to think about. If knowledge is most valuable when we understand its implications, what fundamental difference might it make to the spread, to the structure of that infection graph, if the possible speeds are restricted to a discrete set versus allowing a continuous range? How might that change the branching? Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the geometry and consequences of first passage percolation.